a wide range of topics, an even wider range of views. Talk About on Radio Kerry. Parenting advice on Talk About.
Okay, delighted to welcome Margaret Gilbert into studio. How are you, Margaret?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me, Deirdre.
Not at all. It's always a pleasure. Now, in a moment or two, we're going to talk a little bit about teenagers and we'll have lots to talk about there. But just as an aside, but an important aside, you asked me if you could mention an announcement that the government made recently, and you kind of want to make a comment on it. It's to do with children and parenting.
Yeah, I suppose it's Norma Foley has announced that there's a pilot scheme that there has been 5 million ring-fenced to provide psychological therapies for children in primary schools. And what has been mentioned to date are play therapy and psychotherapy or what have you. But what I want to bring to the attention of the public is that's only part of the equation. That's only saying that we'll support the children, we'll help them manage. But them children are part of a bigger system and their parents are the most important part of that system. They can bring about huge change, huge support for that young person with the anxiety. So what I'm asking people is to think about and approach politicians and things about it. That funding should also include parental-based interventions, supports for the parents that are at home dealing with the children 24/7. If you have a child going into school getting therapy or what have you, and they come home and the parents feel powerless and unknowledgeable and ineffective in supporting their young person, all the outside therapies are not going to help that young person. So what I'd be saying to people is they need to start talking to politicians because this is open to discussion. It hasn't been finalised yet what the money will be for and defining. But make sure you start looking for parental-based interventions because if you look at the numbers, in the first month of 2021, 21,317 referrals were made to CAMHS for young people.
That's the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Service.
Yes. So 14,000 of them were accepted. So that leaves an awful lot of children that weren't accepted onto that, who have a lot of challenges and difficulties. So where does that leave the parent? Very, very isolated, in which they're trying to manage behaviours that are challenging them so badly that they wind up in CAMHS with them, yet they're not for the service. Also, if we're on a 2-year waiting list for CAMHS, parental-based interventions can make huge change, huge impact, and keep the system going until they are actually seen by CAMHS. So when we go into CAMHS in those places, if a child is taken away, they look at parenting skills, they look at parenting interventions, what might suit the person, they look at diet and they look at nutrition. All that can be done. So all I'm saying to parents is there are parent intervention programs out there for children with anxiety, for children with school refusal, but for aggressive and violent behaviours. So start asking the politicians to make sure some of that money is ring-fenced for that in primary schools, that if you have a primary school that may have 10 children presenting with similar challenges, that school might have to ring fence some of that money to do parental based intervention with a group of 10 parents, which would make the intervention the children get far more effective because the system at home would be changing and the children would be skilled up. But skilling the children without supporting and skilling the parents is negating their importance.
Exactly.
It's disempowering them. The parents are the biggest part of the solution because they're 24/7 with their young people.
Exactly.
When they're up at night with anxiety and they can't sleep, it's the parents that will be there. So if what the parents are doing are not as effective, then all the treatment in the world
isn't going to work.
No.
Yeah, very true, very true. Okay, well, actually, while we have you, just on a lighter note before we move on to the parenting advice slot, we were talking earlier about, I don't know if you heard it on your way in, I was talking about a US chat show host and his name, I thought was Stephen Colbert, but it's pronounced apparently in America, Colbert. So your name is kind of French sounding as well. Are you Gilbert? Have I been mispronouncing your name all along?
Absolutely not. First of all, anyway, I'm only married into it.
All right, so you're not even a Gilbert.
I'm not even a Gilbert. But I think the family, my husband's family, I think that they've Norman descent.
Ah.
And, you know, so, but there is a French version of that name as well.
But you are Gilbert.
I'm Gilbert. And I married it.
Yeah, well, someone texted in and said, you might ask Margaret, is she Margaret Gilbert or Margaret Gilbert? So now, since...
I'll answer to either.
We'll answer to either. I'll just call you Margaret for now, anyway. Fair enough. Listen, okay, Margaret, so let's talk about teenagers. And at the outset, I remember somebody, I don't know who, saying to me once upon a time, an older person saying to me, God, there was no such thing as teenagers when I was growing up. They didn't exist. Was it in the 1950s in America the whole term teenager was invented, inverted commas?
Yeah. I suppose parenting has really changed and we are more in tune with the difficulties and the challenges that young people might experience around the teenage years and that kind of thing. Years ago, we didn't talk about it. I think an awful lot of that was built up inside us and we carried that forward. Whereas we now recognise that talking about these things is brilliant. It helps the teenagers understand what's going on for them. I suppose when you look back at the research on teenagers, an awful lot of it is about confusion, not knowing who am I, where am I going, what am I doing. But there's so much interest from parents now, I wonder is it gone the other side?
Yeah, are we nearly putting too much emphasis on it?
Yes, yeah. Yes, we absolutely can. And I suppose teenage years is a turbulent year for teenagers, right? They don't know who they were, where they're going or who they want to be or who they will be or whatever. So they do have hormones and they do have the stress of schools and all that. But the important thing to remember, it's them that are in that whirlwind. It's them. Just because they're a bit angst and they're a bit worked up or, you know, a bit all over the place or hormone, the rest of us don't have to be. We be the anchor. What actually happens, we want to keep them happy, we want to keep them steady, so we're carrying food down to the room if they're upset, we're asking them what's wrong, who said what to them, all that kind of thing. Instead of accepting that they are a bit all over the place, stop engaging with it. Just because they come home upset and mad from school doesn't mean it has to bring the whole tone of the house down. We get that emotional contagion. If they're not happy, we're not happy. If we're not happy, they're not happy. But we need to put in boundaries so that we can be the anchor for them. If they are angry, mad, sad, they can experience all them emotions. But then they can come to us and chat with us. When we get involved with them, we start de-escalating arguments. We start rowing. We start giving advice, shoulds, you must, and all. All they want is to be listened to. Listen to, stop the advising, stop the you shoulds, you must, and listen. Silence, sit and be, and listen. And listening means repeating what they're saying back to them. I suppose if I got a pound for every time a parent said to me, I'd love to know what's going on in his head. Well, and you say to them, what did they say when you had the last row? You say the same thing the whole time. And you say, so that's what's in his head.
Yeah,
that's so the message.
The child says to the adult.
The child says to the adult, yeah. You say the whole thing, same thing again and again. So that's what they're saying. They're telling you, please stop.
Repeating.
On and on and on about the same thing. I've heard it all before. I don't need it. So all they want is to hear them. They come home from upset. They might not want to talk. So it's that silence and that space, being able to sit with them. They might put on the radio to regulate themselves, but we're all the time jumping in, almost pulling at them to find out what's wrong, what's going on. There's something in his head, he's very deep.
Yeah, it's like that old-fashioned expression, let the hair sit, isn't it?
Yeah. Just we're continuously, so we have this impression now that we must manage our young people's emotions. If they're sad, then I'm sad.
Fix
and the
it,
whole house
yeah.
is all up there. If they're studying and stressed over exams and the whole house is, shh, 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 it's a calm, we must get his dinner, we must drop it down to him, shh. Everything's gone mad around the young person. But it's the young person that's in the turbulence.
Yeah, it's almost like when you hear, I remember hearing somebody saying to me one time that they had a family and, you know, there was a mum and a dad, your nuclear family, the mum and the dad, and there was a couple of kids, but one of the kids in the house was doing the Leaving Cert. And it seemed to me from the outside, from what that person was saying, it was like the whole house was doing the Leaving Cert. Yeah. And I remember kind of thinking, you know, when I did the Leaving Cert, like, okay, I was doing it, it was stressful, but it wasn't affecting the whole family. So I think we've actually got to that stage now where it's almost like the child is leading the whole atmosphere of the family home and all
that's
of that.
It. So there's a lack of boundaries between what's the young person's emotions and their turbulence to what everybody else's is. So, like I said, we're pandering to them. It's not, I mean, they must be heard, listened to, spend the time with. But they must also be given that space to be dysregulated, to learn how to regulate themselves. And we need to be calm and anchored so they can anchor off us. They can co-regulate when they're off their kilter. If everybody else around them is up there as well, then they have no anchor. They've no one to say, actually, that's what calmness is like, do you know?
So I'll give you a for instance. Mm. Let's say you have a teenager who comes in from a row with their friends and they're crying and they're giving out and maybe effing and blinding or whatever and slamming doors and nobody likes me and it's not my fault and I hate my life and all those things that teenagers throw. And they're high as a kite. So what are you saying is the best reaction to a scenario like that?
The best reaction to that, first of all, you never deal with a young person if they're hungry or need to be fed. So you might offer, would you like a cup of tea? Would you like your lunch? You sit down with them and you keep calm. Sounds like you had a tough day. Your friends hate you. You're not getting on well at school. This is bothering you. And
repeat it back.
Yeah.
So feed them first.
Feed them first. Never deal with a teenager on a hungry stomach. Or or ourselves. If people are hungry, you're going nowhere.
Hangry, that's a combination of hungry and angry.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
So feed them. And it often calms things. When we feed things back to children and they feel heard, that's all they want. We get into the mode. Oh, have you said that to him? Did you try that? And he can't say this to you and he can't say that to you. So the young person is just hearing your stuff, your issues. Where's all they want? I have a good friend and, you know, you'd be ranting about something. She said, I hear you. And you'd rant. I hear you. And then you kind of stop and say, okay, it's no longer an issue.
Exactly. Once you feel heard. We all want to feel heard, don't we?
That's it.
Talk About on Radio Kerry.
Now, Margaret, somebody's just been on to say, Margaret is brilliant. She's a pure tonic. I get that a lot every time you're on the show. I think they love your common sense approach. Just to remind people, we're talking about teenagers and some of the issues that parents might have with teenagers. We should say, of course, Margaret, that there's actually, I've read this, there's actually a very solid scientific explanation for why teenagers are so emotional. It's to do with their brain development, isn't it?
Yeah. I suppose, you see, it's a time of huge change. They shift from primary school to secondary school. Their body is changing. I mean, you know, the boys are getting the vice, there's hair growing, there's, you know, genitals, all those organs, everything is changing. So their whole world around them seems to be changing. So you have that huge shift then to friendships, to body image and all those things that they may or may not have kind of looked at before. So it is, there's hormones, there's everything going on at that time. Like, that's significant change. But I suppose what we forget is it's also significant change for the parents. Because this is a little youngster that you have nurtured since they were, you know, in your tummy years ago. Do you know, when you were pregnant and when you reared him and you brought him up. So there's a letting go stage here as well, a transition that parents need to make that we forget. We need to leave behind this giving out, all these kind of things and recognise that we've instilled our values and our morals in them and trust them to carry them forward and act and behave in ways. But they're listening to the values now of teenagers out there. They're learning their own values and checking them out and all that kind of thing. So all that is going on, but the parents need to learn. There's a letting go for them here too. Giving them that space to actually go to do that more talking with their friends, to try out their values, you know, to be angry, mad and try out all those emotions and all that kind of thing without getting caught up in it.
Exactly. Margaret, a question for you, and I'm not surprised this one came in. A listener says, will you ask Margaret her opinions about parents not allowing a 16-year-old have a phone? I would say that that's it would be very you'd really have to work hard to try and find a 16-year-old without a phone. But I'm sure those parents have their own reasons.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. But I suppose what we have to look at, phones are the technology of our time. We do need them. Even, you know, I suppose everybody needs to be growing at the rate of technology and society and not be the outcast in that. Now, I do understand and respect parents' opinion that they decide not to give them. But you have to look at, are we unskilling them then? What are their reasons for not giving it? Is because they don't trust them? They don't haven't done the work around keeping them safe? How long do they think they can actually keep a child without a phone? And you wonder if the parents aren't allowing it, is the child accessing one elsewhere? Do you know, it's the technology of their time. They need to be up with it, but we need to teach healthy use of technology. Do you know? So I'd be wondering, you know, I think our children need a bit of it. They don't need too much of it. Keeping it till they're 13, 14, if we can, is great, because they're very young and they get access to the internet very young. The later we delay that, the better. But again, it boils down to parents' personal opinion.
Mm-hmm. And then I suppose when you do give into it, and I think a lot of parents give into it around, it seems to be around the confirmation time in sixth class, that it comes with boundaries and rules.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's not about banning it, because when we ban things, we know from dieting and all those kind of things, when you're told you can't eat it or you can't have it, you want it even more, and you'll probably use it even more, because there's that kind of mentality that I get it now, it could be taken again, and that kind of thing.
Exactly. Here's an interesting one. Listener says, my teenage son went into fifth year, but his friends went into transition year. He hasn't made any new friends since, and he seems very lonely in school. What can be done?
Yeah, so I suppose the first thing would be to sit with the young fella and just pose your concern to them and listen carefully for his answer. So if he's saying, I'm fine, we have to accept that he is. But I suppose what we can do as parents is be available to foster those relationships outside the school with those other friends that he had and seems to have moved on now. And it would see if he wants to join any clubs. Are there anything to make different friends? What are his interests? What would he be most likely to go? And I'd be looking to say, has he loads of friends in clubs and all that? And also remember that when children change schools and change classes and go to different years, it always takes till Christmas to really settle down and settle in. So it could be that he's just feeling his way for a while, and that it may happen. But again, it's listening to him, asking him how school is for him, and accepting if he says, oh, fine, there's no problems, or I have plenty of friends, or I'm happy with that. Or if he says, no, I miss him, it might be arranging with him, how can he meet him during the lunch hour, how can he meet him outside school and things.
And how would you encourage a child of any age to try to make new friends? What would you tell them to do in order to make new friends? Or is it something that can't be forced?
Well, you see, I suppose we have to sit with the young people first and ask them, you know, what are the challenges for you? Do you know you don't seem to make friends? And see if they needed to be skilled up. They may have no idea how to start up a conversation. They may have no idea. So you might have to do those kind of skills with them. Sit down when you see someone that you like, you approach them. You know, what questions could you ask to get to know their interest? What can you share with them? And it might be doing a bit of education around it. But also, we have some children are reserved and they don't make friends easily. And sometimes we have the expectations that they have 20 friends and loads of friends. But if they have one or two real good friends, the majority of us have a small selection of good friends. The rest are getting out in the wider circle where you have acquaintances and people we meet but we wouldn't go out with and all that kind of thing. So if once that person is going out and doing some sport or some activity where he's mixing with other people, once he's happy in school, and if he is complaining, it's about what blocks them. But listening to the young person, what stops you making friends? What stops you asking Jim, asking him to try and figure out who has similar interests to him in the classroom? Who might you approach and invite to the cinema? Or you know that if he's invited to things like the cinema, that we as parents make the effort to carry him, to transport him. So sometimes we want our children doing all those things, but we mightn't be so readily available to carry them. I know when my children were younger, there was a couple of parents that you share a lot of rides, but there were a couple more that mightn't. But I didn't mind doing loads of turns, because I said it means a lot to me that my children have friends and that they're going out to activities. So this is what I'm going to give to it.
Exactly. Now, this isn't necessarily about teenagers, but it's kind of a serious one. A texter says, if you see a parent dragging a child along the ground in order to get him or her home, is there anything you can do? That's a very tricky one.
Yeah, well, I suppose it is, and it isn't tricky, because a parent dragging a child along the ground is a red flag for child protection. So, I mean, it's ringing a duty social worker and explaining what you've seen, if you can give a description of the person, if you know the name or what have you, and let them check it out, because we shouldn't be dragging any child along the floor.
Absolutely,
you know,
of any age.
So it rings alarm bells, but again, look, maybe the context is different. I don't know, but it's, for me, it's a red flag that child protection, and if it's weekend and all that, the guards are in charge of child protection out of office hours.
Yeah, and a texter coming back to the phone says, what about a child that gets a smartphone at the age of 11 in fifth class? It's my sister's child. She gives him everything he wants. He's an only child. Well, I suppose we could do the whole thing about, we could have a whole show about giving phones to children at what is the appropriate age and all of that. 11 in fifth class does seem a bit young.
Yeah. Well, you see, parents are giving them, so you have to come back to educating them about how to stay safe in it, putting parental apps and things on it so you can control the amount of time they spend on it and what they're watching and what they're viewing. So, like, we can judge other people what they do and don't give. Do you know, it's totally up to the parents. And I suppose that's the society we're in. They give massive machines that are these big phones that have access to the World Wide Web, and not realise that all the dangers of pornography and the paedophiles, that's all online now.
Yeah.
So we're opening them up to that. But if we at least put the parental controls in it, limit the time on them so they have healthy, teach them how to stay safe on it and put limits on their time and watch what they're doing. Parents have a right to have a presence on their children's online usage to make sure they keep them safe. A lot of people think, that's my phone, it's private, you can look at it.
But not if you're a child.
No.
Yeah.
Parents have a right to have parental presence and authority to be able to check that phone to make sure to keep them safe.
Margaret, I could talk to you for another half an hour, but we're going to have to wind up, unfortunately. But there's some lovely comments coming in for you, people saying they love your common sense approach to everything. So Margaret, if people want to find you, you're on
087 174 7813, or we have tonight, we have in the early years support centre in Oakview Village in conjunction with Kerry Mental Health and Wellbeing Fest, a workshop on space, which is supporting young people with anxiety issues, that if anybody's interested in joining us in that, we have a few spaces. So they could register on the Kerry Mental Health and Wellbeing Fest page, a space supportive parenting for anxious children.
Excellent. That sounds very good indeed. Margaret, as always, thank you for your knowledge and your time. And hopefully those answers you gave were of use to people out there.